540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Those who were in the path of Hurricane Idalia assess the damage, and President Biden says he will travel to Florida on Saturday. Governor Ron DeSantis says he will ask the government to declare a fisheries disaster. More from CBS's Jason Allen.
Residents of Horseshoe Beach, Florida are returning to find their small coastal community in ruins.
You want to live on the water, you've got to put up with it, you know?
Here on Keaton Beach, where Idalia first made landfall, it did tremendous damage to some of the homes. But also, strangely enough, other homes built right on the water in some cases appear to be left nearly untouched. Phil and Rhonda Horn returned to their home of 30 years assuming everything would be gone, and were surprised it wasn't.
We're just so happy to be here. Thank the good Lord, is what we keep saying.
Jason Allen, CBS News, Keaton Beach, Florida.
Former President Trump was scheduled to be arraigned in person next week in Georgia on political racketeering charges, but instead, today, entered his formal plea by way of court filings. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
A defendant's decision to say, for an arraignment, I will not appear. Instead, I will just submit my plea via writing. Nothing about that is earth-shattering. I don't think we should take that to mean anything about the specifics of the prosecutor's case or the defense's case here.
One day after freezing up during public remarks, the top Senate Republican has released a doctor's note clearing him to continued work. CBS's Scott McFarland.
In a letter, Congress's attending physician says he, quote, consulted with Mitch McConnell and conferred with McConnell's neurology team and has cleared McConnell to resume his schedule, saying, quote, occasional lightheadedness is not uncommon in concussion recovery and can also be expected as a result of dehydration. McConnell was hospitalized this spring with a concussion after a fall in D.C.
Of 3,000 displaced students in West Maui due to the wildfires, 1,700 are not yet enrolled in school. CBS's Chelsea Davis on the challenge.
Some people even suggested that students can learn under tents at a park or a beach park.
I am a teacher at Lahaina Luna High School. I can teach in this building.
Teachers are also split. Some are ready to teach today. Some said they were even ready to teach 2 weeks ago. One teacher, as you heard, said he can even teach under this tent.
A federal judge in Houston temporarily blocks a new Texas law banning drag shows. ACLU attorney Brian Klosterboer is representing a group of drag queens and LGBTQ plus activists.
This law would go far beyond drag to chill and target any performance in public that could be considered sexual.
The state is expected to appeal. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. There was first a homicide call in Brookfield. The female victim was shot and died at the scene. A short time later, the shooter, a 35-year-old man from Menominee Falls, was found dead at Orchard Lane Elementary School in New Berlin. That was due to a self-inflicted wound. The individuals involved were known to each other, and police were focusing on a house in a neighborhood during their investigation. A former Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office deputy has received a 2-year probation after pleading guilty to making threats against his ex-girlfriend. The plea led to the dismissal of a felony stalking charge and other misdemeanors as part of the agreement for Corey Richardson. Prosecutors say Richardson had threatened to expose explicit photos of his ex-girlfriend and disrupt her custody arrangement for her daughter. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse of peace, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Direct from the Dairy States, it's Sharp Cheddar Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, the Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. You can enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn thing. Sharp Cheddar Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app.
In nearly 200 cities to cut local air pollution and emissions, and officials say they're cheaper to operate. And finally, in Ecuador, in a historic national referendum, Ecuadorians voted overwhelmingly to ban oil drilling in Yasuni National Park in the Amazon rainforest, one of the most diverse biospheres in the world. It's hailed as a historic example of climate democracy, and it was also a victory for indigenous peoples and conservationists.
I will share that hailing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. I want to start off today. Shout out to the folks over at the Bucks County Beacon. In their infinite wisdom, they decided that they were going to run a little story on the program because we're coming up on our 18th anniversary, 18 years of doing this little show and attempting to add balance and sanity to the radio airwaves. And it's hard to believe it's been 18 years since we started this little song and dance. And it really hit home for me today because Facebook does this thing. It reminds me of the stuff that I used to post when I used to use Facebook. And it was 12 years ago this day that we took our son to kindergarten. And there's just an incredible picture of my son sitting on my wife's lap in the kindergarten class. And, you know, I remember that, you know, that just, you know, the pride, the, you know, all that. And he was just so darn cute. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. He was adorable. But, you know, it made me think that, you know, I've been doing this his entire life. Both he and the show have grown. He's becoming a man. We're growing the program bigger. It's one of those things that, you know, you just kind of step back and go, you know, it's been a journey, and it's been a great journey. I was thinking about all the wonderful things that we were able to do over that 18-year period. I mean, we've done several Hungry and Homeless for the Holiday events where we lived in a parking lot for 10 days to raise food and money for the homeless shelter and for the food banks, you know, and the people that we met and the relationships that we built and all of that stuff. We've done several multi-state radio tours, marched on hundreds of picket lines. I got to sleep in the Capitol in Wisconsin for 2 weeks when the Act 10 uprising was going on. Just so much stuff. And, you know, as I'm looking at the picture of my wife and my son, you know, I go back to what my thought was of that day. Because you know when you put yourself in a you can remember what you were thinking, what you were feeling. And I remember in that moment as he walked off into what was going to be his education and his future and his, you know, this wonderful experience for him. I remember just, you know, this feeling of the world is open for him, that he's going to have every opportunity that I never had. And, you know, part of what I've done over the 18 years of doing this show is, you know, fighting to make his path and his sister's path a little bit better, a little bit brighter, a little bit easier. And not just for my kids, but for everyone. And this is, I come back to the original reason when we started this program. The message that we get so often in the mainstream corporate controlled media is all one-sided. I mean, we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs for decades to care about business. Wall Street, got to care about Wall Street. No one gives a tinker's damn about Main Street. And when we've done these radio tours and we've gone out and we've talked to people and you get the opportunity to connect with people, not red hat, blue hat nonsense, but actual, hey, what's important to you? You know, that picture, that's important to me. That kid's education, what he's done the last, you know, 12 years. That's important stuff, not just to me, but to every parent. And I guess I was a little nostalgic, a little weepy-eyed, although I'm not that emotional. It made me think of the fight that's yet ahead. Because what we've been trained to do is we've been trained to get in our camps. And I've said 1,000 times, we got to get past this red hat, blue hat stuff, get a hard hat on and get back to building, because there's so much for his future, so much for that kid sitting in that kindergarten class today, their future that isn't being addressed. Whatever Wall Street wants, Wall Street gets. Whatever Main Street, and education being a big part of that. So as I'm looking around and I'm watching all this outrage being fed to us, all of this anger being fed to us, all this stuff that's meant to keep us pitted again. And this isn't new. Look, 18 years ago when I started this, that was part of it. You know, I remember the day when I said, you know, we should start a radio program. You got to compete with the Limbaughs, because I look at all my truck driver buddies. They're all spewing what Limbaugh is saying to them, which is, you know, you're an individual. Hooray for you. You'd make more money if you didn't have to belong to that stinking union. And I literally had people tell me that. And then when I would ask a simple question of, well, where's that happening? And then why aren't you there? It kind of made them go, oh, I didn't actually think of that. Because what the right has understood masterfully and why they've taken over talk radio and cable news, most people learn by osmosis. You keep hammering the big lie long enough, be it in employment, be it in politics, be it in anything, people are going to buy into it. If you see my email box every day, I know what the right-wing talk shows are talking about before I even turn them on, because my emails are filled up with all of their conspiracy theories. And it's not about making lives better. This is the part that really gets me. It's not about taking on real problems. It's about perceived ones. It's about made up stuff. It's about stuff that, well, just makes you mad. And one of the things that we've prided ourselves here, and in the article, and a guy who used to work for me, you know, said, hey, look, you know, all the things that Biden is doing, Rick's been advocating for years, you know, for 10, 15 years. And this is why I've been telling you. He is literally killing it from my point of view. Because all of the things that we need to do to rebuild and revive and increase the working class prosperity of this country, this guy's doing. Sleepy Joe's doing the job. And yet all we get is more outrage, is more anger. Because they can't attack the policies. Because they're going to work. They can't attack what's happening because it's working. So they have to attack the person. Now, my frustration in all this is we fall for it. And this is where, you know, I go back to this period when we began this little program. It had been over a decade of hooray for me. Hyper-individualism. Greed is good. The one who dies with the most toys wins. Look, internalized that as a kid. But actually saw what happens when that is allowed to fester. And you have an entire society of people who are just eating each other. Which is why the other day I again asked the question, which are you first? Are you a worker or are you a consumer? Because that's a very telling, very simple question. Because I tell you, the guy who says greed is good, the one with the most toys, when he dies, wins, that guy's a consumer first. And the more I think about where we are in this country, the more I'm firmly in the camp of the original thoughts of when we started this, they're still valid today and needed even more than they were back then. So for me, there's opportunity here. There's really... Again, people who have listened know I'm not the greatest. I'm not a great optimist. I tend to be a little jaded. But there's a chance here to make something really happen. And, you know, I wanted to start today off by just going, look, you know, it's been 18 years. There have been a lot of people along the way who have helped in incredible ways. A lot of our union brothers and sisters who have helped fund the program. And there's still more to come. You know, the reality is we've grown to a position that I could have never imagined when I just, you know, blurted out, well, we should probably start a radio program without actually understanding anything. And the learning experience that this has been incredible. But I come back to, it's the people that we've met, the stories that people have shared and how it's enriched, you know. Honestly, I hope it's enriched our audience's lives. I hope it's made, you know, people think a little differently, hope a little more, dream a little more. But it's changed. It's made me a better person. It's made me more thoughtful and more interested in community. We're at a moment right now where, again, I go back to that frame of, are you a worker first or are you a consumer? And really it comes back to, are you in the hyper individualist camp, or are you in the part of, we can build a community? Yeah, I know the right loves to beat up on Hillary Clinton with the frame of it takes a village, but it does. Are you part of a community that wants to make tomorrow better? And for me, that's what all this is about. So I want to thank the good folks over at the Bucks County Beacon for taking some time to publish a story on the little program and share some thoughts on that. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got a lot to get to, but right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, a perfect example of right-wing outrage machine. And you know, I'm always amazed at how the right-wing is able to you know, to kind of, you know, spin their outrage, feed you the red meat that you know, that's going to get you all lathered up and all bunched up in the panties and angry. And then literally to go out and try and, you know, sell you meat. I saw this clip, and I got to play this because it's quite interesting and quite remarkable. There's this woman, a Gen Z woman, what they're calling the clip says it's a female version of Ben Shapiro. And she's over at the Daily, I think it's the Daily Wire, which is Shapiro's thing. But you know, they got this young woman who's, you know, doing the right wing outrage and talking about COVID and how, you know, making all this, just making stuff up, pulling it out of some orifice. I'm not going to guess, but I love the twist at the end. This is the part, gotta be honest, this is the part that really, really makes me laugh. So, yeah, let me play this. Here's the Gen Z girl from the Daily Wire.
Health and for our own good, of course. Lionsgate is the big one that's doing that. Hollywood bringing back mask mandates. Lionsgate Studios, which makes Saw and Hunger Games franchises, asks office staff to don face coverings and test again as COVID hospital rates rise for the fifth week.
Oh, no. Here we go again.
Here we go again.
You guys know what this means. 14 days, only 14. We're just precautionary. Again. We have been there before. We know what that means. 2 weeks to slow the spread. We've done that. We don't want to do it again. And of course, they're going to tell us that it's good for us. It's not good for you. What is actually good for you is a good rancher steak. That is what you should be eating. That is what you should be focusing on. And I'm not just talking about your health. Financially, good ranchers is the healthy option. Health.
I love how they spun that. I love how she spun it there. You know, they're going to tell you that it's good for your health to, you know, do whatever to stay away from COVID. Because guess what? COVID numbers are going up. I'm sure you've seen the stories, and there have been a bunch of them. But, you know, so you've got your outrage. Oh, they're going to come for you again. They're going to make you do all this stuff. And, you know, to get the, you know, the crazy all lathered up. And then they've got them outraged. Fed them the red meat. And then comes the, hey, buy red meat. Hey, here, buy this. It's, understand, all of this stuff is about, it's about lining their pockets. They need outrage to keep you stuck, glued, tuned in, so that you can line their pockets. But I find that just, well, it's typical. It is what you get from the right wing. It reminds me, you know, I was listening to the Glenn Beck one day, and he was talking about his dead brother, and somehow figured out how to weave in a lawnmower and buying lawnmowers off of his dead brother, which is bizarre to me. But this is what's happened over the 40 years. And again, I come back to when I started this. I didn't want to be that kind of, I don't know, there's a word for that. I'm actually not going to go there. I'm not going to use the word. The oldest profession word. Not going to do it. We're going to move along. Hey, did you know Joe Biden's taking the short stairs? Yeah, big headline. Joe Biden takes short stairs. I wish our media would just go, hey, Joe Biden's old. I wish they would be honest. Be honest. Say, he's an old guy. He's old. Every day there's something. There's something, you know, he's taking naps. Whatever. Evidently, there are 18 rickety steps that go up to Air Force One. They're not the sturdiest. So the guy has made the decision to not put himself in a situation where how old is he? He's 80 years old, to maybe not fall and break a hip. Somehow this is bad. Somehow this is, I don't actually know. I don't know if this is supposed to be a sign of weakness. I don't know what this is supposed to be, but the message is clear. And the weird part of this, and this is where my mind goes, I don't know if this is palace intrigue. I don't know if this is coming from in the house or if this is the right wing spin machine just looking for one more thing, or it's a combination of both. Because simultaneously, while we're seeing all this Joe Biden's old stuff, and he's 80 years old. We're also seeing a push for Gretchen Whitmer and Raphael Warnock, which would not be a bad ticket. Let me be very clear. Not against the idea of a Warnock or a Whitmer-Warnock ticket at all. Problem is we've got a sitting president, an incumbent president, who is doing everything that I have wanted a president to do on the labor front for all 18 years of doing this work. So I got to tell you, I'm not ready to give up on Joe just yet. And I think working people shouldn't be either. The reality in this situation is, especially the last couple of weeks, with the stuff coming out of the Labor Department, this is a big deal. We're at a big moment. Now, you also have the media reports. You know, liberals are calling on Biden to sharpen his reelection pitch. I'm one of those people saying, you got to get out there and toot your own horn. And be a little Trump-like. I sat and I thought about this for a couple of minutes before showtime when I was looking at the story of, you know, he needs to sharpen his pencil. that could go in a whole different direction. I started thinking about the accomplishments that this administration has had. And for me, they're historic. This is a sea change. This is a radical change and should be one of these moments where you reach out to the red hats and go, look, this is what you wanted. You know, I was talking to someone today and I said, look, you know, had Donald Trump listened to me in 2017, had he not gone on the crazy meltdown, bizarre path that he went, had he not pursued the tax breaks, had he not gone after the Affordable Care Act, had he not done all of the vengeance and all the petulant stuff that he did, had he not had his temper tantrums in public and followed the simple stuff that Biden has done, had he accomplished this stuff, he would have been unbeatable. And I know my liberal friends are going to lose their mind over that, but the reality is, had he done what he said he was going to do, if you remember, when he ran, he was talking about a $3 trillion infrastructure package. Biden has gotten a historic $1.2 trillion infrastructure package. Imagine something almost three times that large. He was talked about bringing manufacturing back. Had he done any of that, Biden is bringing manufacturing back. Factories are being built. There is a boom happening. Had he done any of that, he'd been unbeatable. And can you imagine? This is the part that I want to get to. Can you imagine what Trump would be saying if he did any of this? Can you imagine the promotion, the PR, and the self-congratulations, and the pats on the back, and the, hey, look at me's? Can you imagine? Got to get some of that. Let's go to the phones. Got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you?
Yes, hello?
Yep, what's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, so I wanted to make a couple of points, and I think you're absolutely right with regard to what Democrats sort of need to internalize when running for office, especially for the highest office in the land. You know, politics today is showmanship. You know, when you look at the research, the soundbite in terms of what people say who are in public office has declined precipitously over the last 30 years. So in other words, you have to say something quick and edgy and to the point. And I know, you know, people want to believe that public policy and politics is some sort of university seminar. It's not. The average person doesn't know very much. It doesn't have much of an attention span. And you've got to be succinct and to the point. And what Democrats are not very good at is getting the message across to their voters and independents and others that, you know, this is what we've accomplished and this is what we're going to give you. And doing it in a very direct, straightforward way, as opposed to a graduate level political science seminar, which all too many people want to have. And I understand that, having come from that background, I think it was a weakness of Hillary Clinton and a number of other Democrats, in that, again, you need just to be direct. You need, in Joe Biden's case, you need to be able to walk out there on the stage and say, this is what we've done. We're taking a bow. Yes, we're the ones who did it for you. We fulfilled our promises, and this is why you need to turn out and vote for us again. I think that one of the mistakes that the Obama administration made was, quite frankly, being too collegiate, and rather than saying to the world, you know what, this is what we did for you. We promised you reform in terms of health care in this country, and we delivered on that. And instead, it was just, well, you know, we passed it. Great, we took a bow. And we'll see what happens with it. No, you get out there every week and you pound that. into the American psyche. This is what we've done for you. These are the benefits that are going to manifest themselves down the road for you. And that's exactly what happened. Nobody going forward is running against the Affordable Care Act. You know, nobody in their right mind, because Republicans knew back in 2008 that if we managed to get it passed, the longer it was in place, the less likely you were going to be able to get anybody to repeal it.
Yep.
Because there's nothing in there that you would want to repeal unless you're insane. If you're a billionaire, sure, maybe. But beyond that, why in heaven's name would anyone want to repeal it? Much of it, it benefits middle-class people, upper-middle-class people. You know, if you've got a couple of kids at Harvard and Stanford, you know, you're paying quite a bit to send them there. If you know what? You get to keep them on your health insurance plan until they graduate. So, you know, there's all sorts of things in there that benefit all of us. You know, there isn't a maximum in terms of lifetime benefit. This is not about poor people. So, yeah, we need to do a better job of messaging.
Absolutely.
And, again, being straightforward about that message.
There you go. Steve, appreciate the call, man. Spot on. Absolutely. Good stuff. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1864. That was the day the final battle of the Atlanta campaign began with the Battle of Jonesboro. The Union had been embroiled in a civil war with Confederate forces to end the slave labor system for 3.5 years. It had been a difficult summer. Battles were increasingly bloody, with casualties on both sides numbering into the tens of thousands. Criticisms intensified against key Union generals like Sherman and Grant. Pressure mounted against President Lincoln to end the war and withdraw the Emancipation Proclamation if necessary. General William T. Sherman mounted the Atlanta campaign earlier that year in May. His forces scored a number of victories throughout the summer, but could not decisively defeat Confederate forces. By August, Northern morale was so low that the Republican National Committee deemed Lincoln unelectable. The Democratic National Convention, convening in Chicago, had declared the war a failure and planned to ride to victory over Lincoln in the November elections. But Lincoln's commitment to emancipation was unwavering, and Sherman did not disappoint. He understood that Atlanta was, as historian Eric Foner describes it, a key railroad hub and the communications and transportation center for the entire Southeast. Sherman's forces had been marching down from Chattanooga for most of the summer. Finally, they marched to the south of Atlanta to cut the last key rail line. And on this day, Union forces positioned themselves at the Flint River and at the Macon and Western Railroad. Over the next 2 days, they would successfully beat back multiple Confederate assaults, destroying the rail line and forcing Confederate forces to abandon Atlanta. The city was now fully under Union occupation.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
The people are revolting, in the very best meaning of that word. An inspiring example of people rising up against a trifecta of economic, cultural, and political oppression has just come to us from a community of seemingly powerless people living in a very isolated place. Long exploited, lied to, disrespected, and robbed, they revolted, daring to take on the biggest, richest, most politically connected industrial power on the globe, Big Oil. Astonishingly, after a decade of protesting, organizing, coalition building, suing, petitioning, and otherwise resolutely rebelling against injustice, these tenacious people just won an inspiring grassroots victory over Big Oil profiteering. One reason you probably haven't heard about it is that it didn't happen in any of the usual centers of media focus, but in the Amazonian rainforest of Ecuador. Also, this revolt was not led by some brand-name environmental group or charismatic political honcho, but by the Tagere and Taromanani tribes and other indigenous Warani people living in the rich biodiversity of Ecuador's Yosemite National Park. Directly challenging the exigent crisis of climate change, the Warani rallied the region's young people into a potent political force. They successfully organized behind a national referendum to 1. Ban oil drilling in the region, 2. Compel the profiteers to remove their wells and pipelines, and 3. Pay for remediation and reforestation. Significantly, They specifically called for leaving oil in the ground so it would not add to climate destruction. And the proposed ban was binding, unable to be overturned by future lobbyists and officials. This is Jim Hightower saying, a resounding 58% of Ecuadorians said yes. As a Warani leader noted, this is the day the planet started to win.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Nebraska, the governor of Nebraska, a guy named Jim Pillen, I think it's how you pronounce it, Pillen, P-I-L-L-E-N, evidently signed an executive order. You're going to narrowly define what the definition of a male and female is, and it's going to be based solely on biological sex. And again, this is one of those weird things. Do we need this? Does this rise to the level of the governor signing an executive order? And then, you know, I got to be honest, it comes back to how you got to check. And then the other part, who cares? Why is this something we care about? I clearly don't. But here to share some thoughts on, well, the Nebraska governor and all of the other craziness we can get to, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. She's a reporter over at Raw Story. RawStory.com is the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, happy Thursday.
So what do you think? You got the governor here weighing in on the culture war. I guess this is like the minimum entry into the Republican world.
You know, I guess maybe this is just his attempt at trying to get some extra money from national groups, maybe. You know, one of the things that I noticed this week is that James Comer has raised four times as much money now that he is you know, going after Joe Biden than he did the last time he was in Congress. So, you know, maybe this is just like the way that you get noticed. It's good for business.
Name it's, recognition. So you got me to butcher his name. Okay, I got it.
Yeah. Pilsner, Pillmeister, Pilstein.
Pillheimer. I don't know.
Something
Pill
like
in,
that.
Pill out.
Some dude.
Pill over.
But the question I have for this dude is, who is defining this? Like, he keeps saying biologically, like, does that mean that you're going to have an actual, you know, person who,
yes,
who is a scientist who defines this?
No. They're going to set up curtain rooms and we're going to do checks. Because, again, these people seem to have this fetish of what's under people's clothing. I personally don't care. I don't. I really, this is one of those issues that to me, eighth grade, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Pursue your happiness. Do whatever you got to do. As long as it doesn't infringe on my right to be happy, I don't care.
I do not want to see your genitals. I really don't.
Wow. Like,
I really don't. Like, it's just not my thing. You know, it's just, it's not my jam. Nope. No criticism to people who are into that.
So
but,
me or anyone?
You know... I'm fine with the ones I got.
Okay, good.
Mine and the boy.
So no show and tell? We can't do this in school then?
No. Okay. Please,
because
for the love
of
God.
Because there's part of me that goes, this is where these folks want to take this. You know,
that's what I think. I mean, that's the only logical conclusion, right?
Yeah.
Like, why else would you guys be so obsessed with this unless you wanted to start looking at people's wieners? Or lack thereof.
You know, yeah, I look at Matt Schlapp.
Dude, for real, that dude
with a name like Schlapp,
and now so he had these allegations from a younger superior, less superior. I mean, I guess he was the superior to the employee, and now he's got a second complaint. So I guess, you know, they're just stacking up complaints are stacking up for him with young boys.
And this is the weird thing. I mean, this is the party of, you know. Anti-LGBT, anti-T,
yep.
You know, all this stuff. And again, I come back to it, and I've been attacked by the left for saying I don't care, because I don't. I want to get to a place where this is no longer a conversation, where it's just you're going to be whoever you're going to be, and God bless you.
Yeah.
And we move forward. I don't want to know, like you said, I don't want to know what you got going on. I don't care. What I want to make sure is, I want to make sure everyone's got an opportunity to make a good living, put a roof over their head, put food on the table, lead that American dream life. That's what I care about.
to me, it's really just about being polite, and it's the hospitality aspect of it. Like, tell me your name. Yep. If I get your pronoun right or wrong, tell me. And then I'll adjust accordingly. Like, it's just about being a polite human being to another human being.
Just being decent. And it doesn't cost you anything to be decent. This is the
really doesn't
part of that.
It is. And I don't know how anybody who grows up in the South, you know, hasn't had that already hammered into their head.
Right.
I mean, that is the thing that just kills you, is like, I have this weird need every time somebody comes over to be like, can I get you anything? Do you need anything? Can I make you something? Are you hungry? Can I make you cookies? Do you need some turkey? What do you need?
What kind of cookies do you make?
Actually, you know, it's funny. My mother just sent me an overnight box of chocolate chip cookies that she baked. All right. True story.
Because if you're going to say oatmeal raisin, I'm on the way over.
She made them with oat flour.
Okay. I'm a big oatmeal raisin fan. So
it has an oaty flavor to it. Right. But yeah. So we put ice cream between them, two of them.
Nice. Nice. Now I'm hungry. Now I'm ready to go. I'm ready to pack it in for the day.
Right.
And maybe have a beer with it. Because evidently, have you seen the new scandal? The new scandal is that Ted Cruz tweeted it out. Evidently, because he says kisses behind if you think he's only drinking two beers. Where'd this come from? Where'd this two beer thing come from? I know that idiot Ducey over at Fox asked the question at one of the press conferences, but where did this come from? What orifice did they pull this out of?
I have no clue. I really have no idea, which is funny because remember who went after the beer company? Remember the big fight where they were trying to, like, you know, ban Miller Lite or something, Bud Light, some subpar beer. I've heard, I'm not a beer drinker, but I hear that the craft beer is the way to go. So Steve Ducey asked it at the press briefing, and Karine Jean-Pierre Blesser was just like, I'm sorry, what? Where are you getting this stuff? And
I bring this up, and the reason that, because I was talking about right-wing outrage, because the outrage machine spins these tales where I'll bet there's a small kernel of reality to this, where some agency somewhere said, hey, you know what? It might be beneficial for your health to limit your alcohol intake, you know, to two beers a week. That might be good for you. And they take this to the next place. Oh, they're going to impose this. They're coming. The alcohol czar. What did he say? Hold on. Why does Biden have an alcohol czar? What is it with liberals that want to control every aspect of your lives? If they want us to drink two beers, they can kiss my... And you go, I want you to drink more. I want you to drink so much that you don't get up.
I would love to have him drink as many as he possibly could consume on the Senate floor.
Yeah.
I think that would be really helpful for C-SPAN viewership. but also, you remember the old, like, health recommendations where they're like, you know, a glass of red wine at dinner is really good for you or something. It helps fight whatever the hell. You know, maybe you're right. Maybe that's this sort of thing where somebody's like, oh, hey, you know, this is good. This is bad. This is, you know, maybe you shouldn't be having five beers a night.
No, the way I see this is them, because their frame is, you know, government wants to control you. And government puts out information all the time that says, hey, this is what our research shows. Because we do a lot of research. Scientists look into a lot of things and publish a lot of stuff. They take that kernel that says, you know, maybe you shouldn't drink more than two beers, especially if you've got any type ailments or whatever, or on medicine or whatever. And then they just extrapolate to that. They're going to control everyone's life. And if you're a drunken idiot, they're coming for you. And it's that kind of fear-based media that is, as I believe, really ripped us apart.
It is. And I feel like it every single week, it's a new thing.
Yeah.
Like, they're just going to invent something
every
new.
Week?
Right.
It's like every day there's something crazy. Like Joe Biden's got secret emails. Did you know he was doing nefarious things with those secret emails? Yeah. Like checking on his dying son.
Yeah. The thing that blows me away with that is they found, like, what is it? 5,000 emails where Joe Biden is referred to in another way other than his name. Well, what's interesting is that typically when you work for a politician, like typing out their name is sort of silly. So you just put like their initials. So one of the things in the search term was JRB. which is how a bunch of his staff refers to him.
Right.
So it just, some of these are so ridiculously silly. I can't understand why, you know, this is their obsession. But like, again, they're trying desperately to find something that they can hang around his neck because the Ukraine stuff is just not working.
Yeah.
Like, nobody is buying any of this.
And the woke stuff isn't working either. The attack on woke isn't happening either. So they're having to figure out which way they're going here. But, you know, it's interesting to me that the people who are attacking Biden for doing this are the same people defending the guy who used to go by John Barron.
Yeah, that's the funny part. Remember when he used to do John Barron? There was another name that he did too before Barron. I can't remember what it was. But yeah, there. This is the dude who he used to, what was it? He used to call like the New York Times or Fortune magazine or something and pretend to be this press secretary when actually it was Donald Trump the whole time. And everybody's
how can
like,
you not know it's him with that stupid voice? How can you?
And I think there's actually recordings of it, so you can hear it, and you're just like, who is this fooling?
Hello, this is Donald Trump.
Right?
This is John Barron for Donald Trump.
I'm absolutely not Donald Trump. Absolutely not.
It's crazy.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, you. Here's the part that bothers me, though. You can't make this up. This is what gets me. And look, my email box is full of stories every day from people going, see this. And it's all of this fabricated outrage designed to keep us at each other's throat so that we don't talk about how to make lives better. And look, I look at the word salad, you know, video collage of that was yesterday. Trump did 31 video posts in 5 hours. Let's talk about mental breakdown. Did you watch any of these? Because I got to be honest, I saw 31. I'm going, I got time for this.
I know. I watched, I lost track of how many I watched because it wasn't like they were posted all at once. They were sort of posted over time. So I'd like see one and then I'd see another one. And then I watched probably the first like what, half dozen. And it to me, it sort of caught me as he basically stood in front of the camera and just started rambling for a long time. And there was just so much insanity that the campaign went through and just cut it into little manageable chunks because there was just like weird stuff in between.
It's crazy.
I mean, that's the only thing I can think.
He was ranting about Russia. He was ranting about Ukraine. And then he went into fascism, socialism, communism, Marxism. And I'm like, did I catch a niner in there? I mean,
they're all the same thing. Like, that's the thing that blows me away. It's like, dude, these are all conflicting ideologies. I'm so disturbed by the fact that you don't know this as somebody who was a president of the United States. But again,
we can't like, do all things... of them at once.
Yeah, you really can't. I mean, I guess you could try, but you'd be opposing yourself. So,
but the weird thing is you would be amazed at how many times someone emails me and puts all that stuff in there and accuses me of being all of them. And I'm going, how can I be a communist and a fascist? How is that? How is it going to be a socialist, a communist, fascist, Marxist, anarchist? How can I be? I don't know.
See, and I mean, I get the same thing, except they also tack on that I'm a hoe and like all of this other stuff. And you're just like, dude, like there's this one dude who's been emailing me off and on for like when I was on vacation in Europe, the dude was emailing me like every other day. So I was living rent-free in this guy's head for weeks while I was gallivanting around Spain and Italy. And it's just sort of like, wow, do you really have nothing else in your life? And the truth is, no, they really don't. But I think you're spot on. Like, this is to keep us fighting with each other so we're not asking questions like, why am I not paid better? Why am I not getting better wages? It's Labor Day. So clearly, you know, these are questions that we all should be asking. And we're not because we're too busy fighting over two beers a week or a day or whatever.
You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, if you want to check out her work. As you said, Labor Day is coming on. I want to pivot here because I got to tell you, I think Biden's killing it. The reality is all the stuff coming out of the NLRB, all the stuff coming out of the Labor Department, raising the threshold for, salary exemptions, speeding up union elections, the CMEX decision, all of this stuff going to help working people do incredible things in the future, I believe. I'm curious, any thoughts on what we're seeing coming out of the administration at this moment?
I mean, it's unbelievable because it's, you know, it's that kind of stuff. But because of the transportation package, you're talking about the building trades are getting a ridiculous amount of contracts. A lot of those workers are being put back to work after the, you know, the shutdown, bringing back all of this manufacturing, whether it's the semiconductors, funding the EVs that are made within the United States is helping, you know, bring more manufacturing being, you know, with the cars being built here. So it really is just this ridiculous amount of long-term investment in jobs in the country. And these are union jobs. These are good paying jobs where you have rights at your job. You have healthcare, you have, you know, the ability to fight for your wages with your union. And it's just like, man, this is the kind of stuff where I feel like we wished Barack Obama could have done this, but there's no way that he could have done it. Because they were too busy trying to find his birth certificate. And it's like, while they were too busy fighting about beer, you know, Biden just sort of like slipped under there and was like, oh, hey, we're going to start paying everybody better. Bye.
No, but here's the thing. And this is where I'm not giving Obama a pass. Sorry. You kind of gave him that, and I'm not. He could have done something. And look,
he could have.
I understand. You know, we had tan suit gate and the Muslim prayer rug gate and terrorist fist bump gate and all of the craziness that Fox and they came out with. You know, to do the same thing to Obama that they're trying to do to Biden. And I get it. This is their MO, and they're very good at it. But he could have done more. Look, I tell this story all the time. I shook that man's hand twice. He looked me in the eye, said, we're going to get the Employee Free Choice Act and something better. And we got zero out of it.
Yeah.
And again, but this isn't new for Democrats. I go back to Clinton. The only reason I voted for Clinton in 92 was because he promised strike replacement. The Bob Dole filibustered it, and then they just let it die. I didn't get the vote in the Carter era. I'm not that old. But he also said, hey, we're going to undo Taft-Hartley. So every Democrat of my lifetime has said, hey, we're going to make labor rights better. We're going to do something. There's one guy who's actually done it. And that's the old guy who's not walking up the big steps anymore. And I wonder, keep the old guy.
Right? I mean, especially given the fact that there are a hell of a lot older people that are, you know, having some serious problems. But I think the thing about Joe Biden is, you know, a lot of these other candidates didn't come from that world, maybe. And with Biden, like, the first people that came to support him were the firefighters, right? Like, that's that story that he tells all the time about when he first ran for office. Those were the guys that stepped up to him for him. And so labor has been supportive of him for a long time. And I mean, it seems sort of to me like he's kind of just saying, like, you were with me, I'm paying you back. Like, I'm getting you back this time, because you know, everybody else has screwed us over. But, you know, lesson for it.
Look, for me, I think he, in this moment, is exactly what the country needs. Yeah. We needed somebody who was going to calm us down. We need someone who was just going to show up and do the job. You know, as they say, look, Jelly Bucket Joe is just coming to work. I do wish he would, you know, be a little more, hey, look at what I did. I wish he would be a little more Trump-like and you know, promoting things that he actually did. You know, as I said a minute ago before you came on, can you imagine if Trump had any of the accomplishments that Biden has had? Can you imagine the amount of self-congratulations and hey, look at me that would come out of that guy?
I mean, he'd be doing a press conference every other day. Talking about, like, you know, with a flow chart, talking about all the things that he's done. And you're right. It is Biden just sort of like going down his to-do list, you know, and being like, all right, what's next?
Doing the work.
And I respect that.
I respect it too. And that's why I'm riding with Biden. I'm going to steal that frame back from them. But hey, Labor Day last, any plans?
I'm off. So I'm excited. You know, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. We haven't even talked about it.
It's going to be our 18th anniversary. We've been doing this little program 18 years, kicked off Labor Day of 05. Labor Day special. For everyone who's listening, we're taking Labor Day off because it is a celebration day for us. But yeah, it's been a good 18 years, I got to tell you.
Have two beers.
I may. I have two in my refrigerator. There you go. And I'll tell Ted Cruz all about it.
There you go.
Wow. But Sarah, I appreciate the time. Have a good holiday. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Happy Labor Day, everybody.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1921. That was the day the Battle of Blair Mountain raged in Logan County, West Virginia. Members of the United Mine Workers of America were attempting to organize the minefields in the southern part of the state. The efforts to bring workers to union was met with violent resistance. The miners armed themselves and marched south. As many as 10,000 miners joined the march. They met armed company men at Blair Mountain. In the battle that ensued, 1 million rounds were fired. The mine owners even hired private planes to drop bombs on Union miners. The U.S. Army intervened and the battle ended. Despite not being successful in their march, the bloody battle brought national attention to the violence in the coal fields. But that was not the last battle for Blair Mountain. In 2011, there was a proposal to bring mountaintop removal mining to Blair Mountain. This type of mining blasts off large chunks of a mountain surface to get at the coal seams below. Protesters stood against the proposal. They argued it would be environmentally devastating to the area. They also argued that it would blast away one of the most important sites of labor history in the nation. Some coal miners took exception to the protests. In a CNN documentary on the conflict, one union miner said, quote, "Mountaintop removal is what built this house, sends that little girl to school, provides insurance for my wife." But another miner joined in the protest against removal. He told CNN that miners had been, quote, "brainwashed to think, oh, I can't have a job unless it's a mountaintop removal job." In 2014, the state prohibited surface mining at Blair Mountain. For now, but that is subject to change. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, Saudi Arabia, this is, again, you know, I look at my Ted Cruz's of the world, I look at the rise of Christian nationalism, and as I've said before, there's a group of folks who would love to see Christian Sharia law here at home, you know, put people in their place. But I saw this story from Saudi Arabia that evidently a guy who in his mid-50s was tweeting or Xing or however you're going to put that, you know, mostly retweeting criticism of the government. And Mr. Bonesaw, Mohammed bin Salman, not very happy with that. So he was arrested and I guess convicted. He's sentenced to death for his tweets. Sentenced to death. Now, here's the part that caught my attention. I go, look, Saudi Arabia, they kill people all the time for minor things. You stole food out of the thing, chopping off a hand. Criticizing the government, I guess, is going to get you a death penalty. The problem that I have with this is this father of seven, in his mid-50s, was retweeting with stuff with 10 followers. He had 10 followers over two anonymous accounts that he read. 10 followers. So basically the stuff that he was retweeting and saying, nobody saw except the government. And this is where, you know, I love my right-wing friends who point at Joe Biden and point at all this stuff. I'm not seeing them coming after people for tweeting hate stuff at the administration. And this is where I caution the hyper religion. I caution this push towards authoritarianism that we see coming with Trump. If you watch some of these videos, some of these weird, bizarre rants, and the credit that he wants to take for things that, sorry, I'm just not buying. It's frightening. And I guess what is scary to me on a much larger level is people are influenced by this guy.
millions of people, you know, watched these videos. There's something unhinged, something wrong there. And my kids.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.